I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 310 of Low Limit Football on this 3rd of January, 2021. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, FIFA names Robert Lewandowski the best player of 2020. We'll discuss what that means to the other competitors. The silly season known as the winter transfer window has begun, and we'll discuss the big names looking to move. Champions League round of 16 has been set since we last were on the air. We'll give you the matchups, and we're going to look deeper into the Premier League with our very special guest, Mari Lewis from the Liverpool Offsides on SB Nation, who will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year, Joe. Super excited to be back on for another year of doing podcasting. I'm so excited to talk about what's been going on in the world of football. But more importantly, however, and I think this is even bigger than anything that's been going on in FIFA, in the Premier League, or whatever it may be, how is your arm?
My arm is doing fine, and I feel great. If, I don't know if you follow my Twitter feed, you saw that last Tuesday, to be exact, I received my first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. My next dose is due in a couple of weeks. It's the Pfizer vaccine. And aside from a little bit of shoulder soreness and a little bit of fatigue at the end of the day, I feel fine. And no side effects for me. I'm not one of these people that has had side effects from vaccines other than the ones that I just listed. And yeah, feel great. I don't think the government's tracking me. I think they do that through my cell phone. And I don't have any side effects. The joke is my brother and I were also making this joke was because it's the Pfizer vaccine, they made it in the lab that where they made Lipitor. So my cholesterol is great right now, as well as having some immunity to the coronavirus vaccine, to the coronavirus itself. So
that's a win-win, basically.
Totally a win-win. You know, there is a joke to be made with the Viagra version of that, but I'm going to leave that alone to keep it more of a family show here for for us all. Everything is doing well, and hopefully wherever you are listening to this, there is some semblance of a rollout of a vaccine, and hopefully many people get it soon, build that immunity, and we can go back to being normal. I would love to see normalcy sometime before the end of the year. Would really, really be nice. So how about you, sir? You know, you were on a nice little extended vacation. How was your trip?
Yeah, it was great, man. It was awesome. I think it's always good to go back to Paraguay. And, you know, I honestly didn't expect to go back, especially in the middle of a pandemic. But sometimes you have to make the sacrifice to visit your family. My grandmother actually just turned 97 a couple of days ago. So obviously it's a huge thing for a lot of us. But no, it's always great to be back. Always good to be back when, you know, you're dealing with summer and 90-degree weather. It just sucks that it's so cold out here, man. But thankfully, Thankfully, I missed out on the big snowstorm that happened, I think, a couple days after I had left the United States.
It was the day after you left, actually. It was one day after. And amazingly,
even better. Even.
And amazingly, this Christmas here in the Northeast in Connecticut, we had the reverse white Christmas. When you went to bed on Christmas Eve, there was almost a foot of snow on the ground. And when you woke up Christmas morning, it was green grass. So we had the reverse white Christmas this year. And that is very 2020 of Christmas, isn't it?
Yes, but let's forget about 2020. It's over. Yeah, it's in the past. I mean, we do have to talk about some things that did happen in 2020, but it's a new year, man. 2021. We got a lot of things going on, in not just in soccer, but I think in life as well. Yeah. You know, we just focus on that. And of course, I'm ready for when I have to put up my sleeve and have my arm vaccinated.
Absolutely.
Just waiting for that moment.
Hopefully sooner than later. So let's jump into it. Like you said, we got a little catching up to do. I have the trivia, so let me give that to you first. And believe it or not, it is not a really a soccer trivia question so much as it is a low limit football and a reflection trivia. How's that? I'm throwing you a huge curveball here, but welcome to 2021. So, you know, obviously, you know, going back to 2020, we've talked about all the loss that we've had. And although we did not lose this person in 2020, I found myself driving around the other day and I found myself thinking about him. And that's our old great friend, Jim Hart, who had passed away. And it's funny, I'm thinking about Jim, you know, his Twitter handle was Catenaccio, if you remember correctly. But for some reason, for a minute, I couldn't remember the first time we had him on. We didn't call him Jim Hart. He had what he referred to as a nom de guerre. I don't know if you remember that. One of the very first.
I do.
Yes,
I do remember.
So the trivia question to you, my friend, is what was Jim Hart's nom de guerre?
Ah, oh, man, I know the first name, but I don't know the last name.
I know. I drove around for a little while, and I'm like, man, I can't remember it. And then it popped in my head. So in honor of our friend Jim Hart, what was his nom de guerre? That's it. I'll give it to you at the end of the show. It took me a little while, but I got it. So let's jump into opening thoughts like we always do, my friend. And let's talk about this year's FIFA's Best Awards, because the winner of the FIFA Best Award this year was none other than Robert Lewandowski, edging out players like Messi, Ronaldo, and so many others on this list. Obviously, Lewandowski, aside from, I believe, Luka Modric, is the only player to have won this, not named Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi, since 2008. Obviously, what he did winning the treble at Bayern Munich, the goals, everything, we've talked about it over and over again. He was also voted the number one best male footballer of 2020 by the Guardian list that you were a part of. And for me, you know, we've talked about this. We talked about the Ballon d'Or and how they weren't going to award it, but then they did award it. This is just another laurel in the cap of Robert Lewandowski for me, a well-deserved award. I don't think there can be any arguing with this. What are your thoughts about Robert Lewandowski kind of putting the cap on his fantastic season?
I mean, it's the season of dreams, really, or at least the year of dreams, I would say. I think when you have been so good for so long, in a short amount of time, you know, you have to get some sort of reward. I think it's unfortunate that we didn't actually see a Ballon d'Or ceremony, because obviously he would have won it, hands down. I know there are some people that perhaps don't believe he's the best player in the world, but I think when you go to common and the majority of a consensus, he has to be up there. I mean, he's just been someone that has been so respected for a long time. I think he's always been one of the more consistent strikers of his generation. I mean, when you score over 40 goals over the last, God, it's been like 5 years now in all competitions, and you consistently just become good and good on a Bayern Munich side, you know, you have to get the respect necessary. I think, you know, obviously winning the Champions League and obviously winning the treble in that sense pushed him into the stratosphere as being the best in the world because of the dominance that he had in on a team that was so good. Let's remind you, Joe, that that team was not Lewandowski in 10. That team was Lewandowski, that was Mueller, that was Alphonso Davies, that was Serge Gnabry, you know, that was Joshua Kimmich, Manuel Neuer, the list goes on. So it proves as a huge precedent of how good you've been when you've been so great on a good team. I mean, you know, we see that when we had with Messi at that great Barcelona side. We see it with Ronaldo with the great Real Madrid side. You know, it's not just one person leading the line for an entire team. You know, it's a team effort, of course. It's obviously going to be a team effort. But for him to stand out and to be so stellar more than anyone else is a precedent of how good he's been at Bayern Munich. And it's well-deserved. I'm not saying that maybe now this is going to be the change of, you know, as you said, the end of the Messi-Ronaldo dominance that we've seen over the last decade. We don't know. These guys have always surprised us so much over the last few years that we don't know what we can expect in 2021. Mm-hmm. You know, and the fact that it's starting to close out on two great careers because of the age that they're both in, you know, we have to appreciate them more than ever before. But at the same time, you know, we have to change the guard on, you know, rewarding the best players in the world. We saw that with Lewandowski. We saw that with Modric afterwards. Who's next? We don't know. We know there's a stellar kid playing at, North, I think. I'm not good at my German geography, but, you know, the team that's playing for the Yellow Wall and Erling Haaland. You can go to France and see another kid doing well at Kylian Mbappe. You know, maybe we go to Spain and we go to the Wanda and see how Joao Felix is doing. Maybe go to Camp Nou and see how Ansu Fati is doing. We can go to Real Madrid and see what Vinicius Jr. is doing. The list goes on and on. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what comes after Lewandowski. But speaking of Lewandowski himself and the career that he's had and just how it finally took time for him to understand that he's just been so stellar and has been breaking records as has been that great goal scorer that we've been so accustomed to over the last few years. It's justice to finally see him get rewarded for being the best player in the world. And really so, one of the best players in Bundesliga history. I mean, when you score that many amount of goals and win that many amount of titles, you have to give the respect that's necessary. And I think Lewandowski deserves that. And towards the end of his career.
Sure. I mean, you know, you bring up the career itself in the Bundesliga and, you know, going all the way back to Dortmund and those days, he's always been a prolific scorer and again, deservedly so. I think you bring up a good point. I think we're starting to see the changing of the guard. I don't think this is going to become the Ronaldo Messi award anymore. Not to say that they won't challenge for it. I think that still will continue. I think they will, you know, at least for the next 3, 4, 5 years, you will see Ronaldo or Messi have their names kind of intermingled into these awards. Will they win them? It depends on the years that they have. You know, that you've got to remember that Messi and Ronaldo have a much higher bar set for them based on their previous success. We've talked about that many, many times. And I think that is a bar that might lower itself a little bit as they get on in age. But at the same time, it will always be there. And I think like the names you brought up, like Kylian Mbappe, like Erling Haaland, like Vinicius Jr., like Joao Felix, those names will start to crop up even more and you will start to see more of a changing of the guard. I think we started to see it with Modric winning it in 2018 because of his heroics at the 2018 World Cup. We see Lewandowski take that award now. And I think we're going to continue to see these players kind of chip away at the wall that Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi have built over the past 10, 15 years to go ahead and replace that. And I think we're going to start to enter that new age of world football where at the moment we're going to have many prolific and exciting players. And for me, you know, as much as we've been blessed to watch Messi and Ronaldo play, you know, in this time, there is something exciting about bringing on a new age and a new era of world football where we have multiple stars and this award stops being the Messi Ronaldo award and becomes a little bit more of a crapshoot, right? Where we don't know who's going to win, who's going to have that, that fantastic year, who's going to lead that team over the top. You know, we could easily see a situation now that if PSG go on and win the Champions League, you would probably give that award to Kylian Mbappe or Neymar.
you know, that's the kind of path that we're on, that we're going to have these titles matter more. The team titles matter more for these particular awards, the Ballon d'Or or the FIFA Best Award. It's going to be an interesting time to enter, and I think it's an exciting time because there will be more of a variety of players to choose from. And I think this Robert Lewandowski Award, again, given the fantastic 2020 that he had, is well-deserved, and I think it is the stepping stone into that new era for me. Some of the other things that I was reading over during the FIFA Best Awards, Lucy Bronze took the award for the women's best player. And Roberto, I didn't know this, excuse me. Lucy Bronze became the first player, male or female, from England to land the honor from FIFA. How's that? I you wouldn't have expected that, but that is an interesting fact.
Yeah, no, I think I was looking back. I think it's been almost 40 years that an award, and I think we add in the Ballon d'Or as well, that an Englishman or an English woman was awarded the best in the world. You know, you have to go a long time, but I think it just shows how, even for the women's game as well, I mean, we all get accustomed of how great the United States has been, given that they are the defending world champions and how they've been the most successful, but we've seen talents rise all around the world. I mean, obviously, we have the experience in Marta, who's been great at Brazil, obviously now going into the end of their career, but, you know, you look at players that are doing well in England, the Netherlands, France, Spain, Italy, the list goes on, you know, and that just makes how competitive it can be now when it comes to being named the best in the world, not just in the women's game as well, but even for the men's game as well, is that we see that openness of people from different nationalities. I mean, think about it. I mean, yes, Lewandowski is a great player and everything, but, you know, for him to be the first Polish player to win it, you know, after quite some time, or I think he's the first one, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, for him to get that award is incredible. And I think it proves how we're entering in an age where we need to start opening the world, you know, and I think being accustomed to seeing an Argentine or a Portuguese win it every year for the last 10 years, it gets a bit old after a while. Mm-hmm. And this isn't obviously discredit to the great players that they are over the last, you know, decade or so, but, you know, it's time to change the guard and to see that, you know, we need to open it to the entire world and see how they can do and who fares out as the best of them all.
Yeah. Before we close the segment, I want to give you the World 11 for the men and women as voted for by FIFA. In goal for the men, Alisson Becker, and then you have Trent Alexander-Arnold, Virgil van Dijk, Sergio Ramos, Alphonso Davies, Joshua Kimmich, Kevin De Bruyne, Thiago Alcantara, Lionel Messi, Robert Lewandowski, and Cristiano Ronaldo round out the FIFA Men's 11. The FIFA Women's 11, Christiane Endler, Lucy Bronze, Wendy Renard, Millie Bright, Delphine Cascarino, Barbara Bonansea, Veronica Boquet, Megan Rapinoe, Pernille Harder, Vivian Maidema, Tobin Heath round out the Women's All-World 11 for the awards. So let's close that segment. And let's move on, because for our first guest of 2021, we were just moments ago joined by Mari Lewis, who's from Liverpool Offsides on SB Nation. We got to talk about Liverpool. We got to talk about the Premier League. We even got a little Thomas Tuchel in there. So without further ado, the Mari Lewis interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from the Liverpool Offsides on SB Nation, it's Mari Lewis. Mari, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us to open up 2021. I'd like to kick off by asking you a quick question about Liverpool in general. We've seen them suffer massive, massive injuries to Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk, really the heart of their central defense. However, this team is still first place, albeit by goal differential, but they are still in first place in the Premier League. They've advanced in the Champions League despite not having those two available for a significant amount of time. What do you credit Liverpool's ability to maintain their position in the Premier League and challenge on all these fronts despite these massive injuries?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me. And to answer that question, I can't really be sure, because clearly no one expected this to be the case. I've always thought this Liverpool side are very good at siege mentality. So if you're looking at the Barcelona comeback, that's an example. We had very important players out injured for that and managed to do it. But it's a very different ask to do it for a sustained period of time. a league season isn't meant to be easy, and it certainly isn't meant to be done with your main players, your vice captains, that sort of thing, out for the season. What I will say is, if I read Robertson and Mel Reddy's book on winning the league seasons correctly, something that Liverpool as a club under Klopp have done pretty consistently for the past couple seasons is focus on mentality and overcoming things. So I don't know if you've heard of it, but there was a lot of chatter about bringing in the big wave surfing expert to talk about overcoming challenges. And what he had the players do in France in their training camp was stay underwater for longer and longer and longer periods of time as a means to overcome challenges. And that sort of mentality to me speaks to how the team has been able to be larger than the sum of their parts this season, though we're in a bad patch at the minute, but hopefully they'll continue doing so and go against the odds.
Well, you know, Mari, you talk about a bad path, and yes, it is going to be a big challenge for them to, not just for Liverpool, I think for any team that is looking to defend their Premier League title. I think obviously looking at the table at the moment, you know, when you have five teams separated by 4 points and only Liverpool leading by Manchester United on goal difference, it's now more than ever to test that mental fortitude, not just because of what they've been able to prove winning titles and having that kind of great depth as well. But now it comes into these big games. And obviously, the big game that we have to talk about is not the one against Southampton, but the one against Manchester United on the 17th. How important is that game now for Liverpool, given that, you know, they're trying to get players back from injury? They're obviously dealing with a congested schedule that we've seen ever since December, basically, of so many games happening in a short amount of time. How important is that game now against Manchester United? And, you know, I know it's a bit far-fetched to say because we know how unpredictable the season has become and how tight it's been, but could that game on the 17th decide the league title as a whole?
I mean, any game against any of the teams here and hereabouts is going to be hugely important. The game against Tottenham was a supposed title decider, kind of, in some people's eyes. With everything so tight, I think to say that it's not as important as other ones would be blatantly lying to you. But no, I'm not really sure yet who are sort of title contenders yet. I think Manchester City have fallen a bit behind, but we forget their games in hand, more so with the postponement. So I will be watching Chelsea play them later today with interest. I'm pretty confident going in against Manchester United. I think we've played very well against the bigger sides thus far this season. I think it's easier to gain that sort of collective mentality to rise up against teams that we know are our direct competitors. We've fallen off against teams who we haven't been able to anticipate as well, or just were exhausted against. So I'm a bit more worried about how we'll come out against Southampton, not because Southampton are poor this season. On the contrary, they're one of the best teams in the league on form. But just because I worry that we may be sort of storing our reserves to play against Manchester United. But yeah, Manchester United, Chelsea, and Manchester City are who I at least personally view as the I'm checking your scores every weekend competitors.
And obviously, you know, switching gears to the Champions League, where Liverpool look to win again the Champions League after getting knocked out in the round of 16 to Atletico Madrid, they do have a huge task against a huge team that, you know, have surprised. Well, I wouldn't actually say surprised, but I think they definitely dented the way that we perceive the Bundesliga, and that's RB Leipzig. They play RB Leipzig in the round of 16, the first match in February. Obviously, a team that made the semifinals under Julian Nagelsmann of the Champions League last season. They're currently top of the Bundesliga at the moment. So, obviously, not an easy task for any side, minus Liverpool. But how confident are you? And just your reaction of that draw that was made a couple of weeks ago?
I was pleased with the draw result. They play in a style that I think benefits Liverpool in a lot of ways. Open, brave, attacking. Smart manager against a smart manager is something that I like to see in the Champions League. I would have been worried if we got, you know, your Atleticos, that sort of thing. So I back us over two legs in the Champions League. I do worry a bit that we're getting into once you get into the knockout phases, I think we'll feel the absence of the crowd a bit more. Champions League nights are some of our big home advantages, and not having fans there will make it a very different experience. So I'm not sure how that will pan out. But I like our odds. I think we're also a bit hamstrung in the team sheet for the Champions League in terms of what defenders we have available, as you may have noticed. But no, I back us. I'm obviously going to back us regardless. But I think it's a good draw for us and much better than it could have been otherwise.
Definitely. I think it will be a very interesting task and definitely a very interesting time. Joe, you know, going into you on this one, actually, it seems as if, though, you would say, yeah, Liverpool are the favorites on paper to win this. But this Leipzig side, as we've seen, not just this season, but also last season, and also given the fact of how the players that they've had at their disposal, can really cause a surprise, if we even have to say it as a surprise, for this tie.
Sure. I mean, they play great team football, and we've noticed it now for over a year. We've looked at them, you know, thinking about last year and the run that they made in Champions League, the run that they made in the Bundesliga. Now they come in and they do that without Timo Werner, who was their talisman last year, moves on to Chelsea, and they still haven't missed a beat. I mean, it's a credit to Nagelsmann as a manager in terms of what he has done with that team to keep them playing consistently. And I think that can become a little bit of a challenge to Liverpool. They do Leipzig do defend very, very well. So that is going to be something that is going to be a challenge, especially given the high attacking profile that Liverpool give you. You know, obviously with Mo Salah, with Sadio Mane, with Roberto Firmino, and they can back that up even further. I think it is going to be an interesting challenge. Leipzig returns a player like Dayot Upamecano, who is one of the more sought-after defenders. We see what he means to that team as well. So that's going to be an interesting challenge, both in the team football that Leipzig like to play and the attacking style that Liverpool present back at you, which way that tie will go. I don't think it's as cut and dry as many would think, but it is certainly going to be entertaining, to say the least.
Definitely. I do have to switch gears, though, when talking about a topic that had been going around Twitter over these last few days, and that's from the fact that this has to be a topic and has to be talked about is just unbelievable, was the Leeds United tweet towards Karen Carney, the pundit on BT Sport, who unfortunately faced a lot of abuse. And I feel like it was absolutely shameful that we saw so many people go after her for a comment. And the fact that Leeds United would have to tweet about that is just, you know, a disgrace as well. I mean, Mari, it seems as if, though, there's a culture, and especially on Twitter, you know, where you could see so many people that talk about football and want to engage with people. When you see something like this made from a professional team account, it just puts to shame, especially given it's a Leeds United side that have gained a lot of attention and a lot of respect from around the world because of the way that they play.
Yeah, I'm not accustomed to seeing team accounts make those kinds of tweets, just generally. I think fan accounts and fan group accounts are a bit different. But I think I saw on Twitter as well, actually, someone I follow, Mike Goodman, put it best, because though it's fine to disagree with a female pundit, female pundits, just like male pundits, have stupid takes every once in a while. But what Mike said was, and I'm quoting him here, I dream of a world where a woman sports pundit expressing a terrible opinion does not bring her more abuse than what a dude does. But until we live in that world, you got to act accordingly. And what he means by that is just generally, like, putting her up for that sort of thing, you know, is going to lead towards gendered abuse rather than just you're an idiot. And that's just the reality. So that was disappointing to see. Just knowing what the result would be before even looking in the replies to that tweet. So yeah, not great.
Unfortunate, to say the least. I'm going to jump back in here. I want to come back to Liverpool because I do have a couple more questions that I do want to ask you about. First, in regards to Liverpool, we're looking so far, we're almost at the halfway point of the season, believe it or not. I know COVID has really blended the 19, 20, 21. It just seems like all one big mishmash, but we're actually halfway through the 2020/2021 season. And right now, as we stand, Mo Salah currently leads the Premier League in goals with 13. Now, he's being chased by a couple of prolific goal scorers, or at least
goal scorers that we've seen so far this year. We've seen Dominic Calvert-Lewin sitting right now at 11 goals. We see Heung-Min Song at 12 goals, one goal behind. We see Bruno Fernandes, Jamie Vardy. There are a couple of high-profile scorers. Even Harry Kane is 3 goals back of Salah. But my question to you, Mari, is at this point in time, would you consider Mohamed Salah to be the MVP of the Premier League for the season?
I mean, that's always going to go to someone who's scored the most goals, so I won't make any arguments for other positions or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think he has been largely back in form this season in a way that I haven't seen him play for about a year in terms of the variety of goals that he's scoring. He's able to take just cheeky little pot shots quite often. I will say that he's made a few pens this year, which is bolstering his numbers. But if you're looking at like XG and that, he's on par with his, closer to it than Son, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think he's been carrying his team in a way that makes him MVP-able. I think he's certainly in the argument. Mm.
Let me ask you this then, because obviously Bruno Fernandes would be the one that many would put on the list that would be kind of neck and neck with him. I know everybody looks at Kevin De Bruyne, but he hasn't had quite the season that he had last year. Fernandes, very high up in goals, very high up in assists. Would the MVP title or decision be based on if one or the other wins the league? Do you think that would separate the two?
Well, that's how it always goes. Mm. it's Woodward. If he won the Champions League in the league, probably. So, yeah, it'll be if Manchester United win the league, I wouldn't be surprised if Bruno Fernandes were to win whichever, take your pick of the MVP-related awards for that reason and most of all the other way.
Right, exactly. One more question before we let you go, and more of a generalized question. With what happened in PSG this week, Thomas Tuchel finally being let go at PSG, Mauricio Pochettino stepping in for him at PSG, Tuchel obviously being a free agent and a free agent for me that is, I don't know, it was kind of, Roberto and I always say on the show, it's a what have you done for me lately world where, you know, it's amazing how you can be one of the greatest of all time and then be a disaster the next day. It happens within 24 hours. Tuchel's a guy that returned 4 titles last year to PSG and they rewarded him by sacking him. For me, Thomas Tuchel and his style of coaching and his style of play really fits the style of the Premier League in general. So if you had to think of a landing spot for Thomas Tuchel right now in the Premier League, where is the one place that you think he could end up as his next coaching job?
I mean, the obvious answer at the moment is going to be Arsenal, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just because of the struggles that they have had. But given that it's Arteta there, I'm not sure that would really happen. Just as I would have said at the beginning of the season, Tottenham might be a shout. But given that they started doing quite well under Mourinho, it's unclear. Same with Manchester United. So it's a hard question to answer at the moment in the league, if that makes sense. At the beginning of the league, I could have given you, 3 or 4 names. But at the moment, I'm not certain. I would be interested to see what happens with Pep Guardiola's contract situation. But I'll if I'm forced to pick one, I'll go Arsenal. I think they might end up being heartless.
It's funny. I was thinking along the same lines as you because, I'm thinking Arteta, he's got the ties there. And right, it would be a little heartless, even though they're not exactly performing greatly. The other one that would be a similar heartless situation would probably be a team like Chelsea, but that more of an attacking style team. But again, a club legend at the helm there in Frank Lampard, that would be one where they might quickly pull the trigger on as well, don't you think?
And see, that one's been surprising to me because of all of the ownership structures, the involvement that Abramovich has, and general their heartlessness made me think that Lampard would be quicker to go, especially given that he hasn't maybe got the results that he should have gotten already, given the personnel that he has. But the thing is, this is going to be such an injury-heavy season and squad depth is going to be hugely important. And I think Chelsea have quite a bit of that right now. And so I could see them putting together a run, But yeah, that would be the, based on my own logic, Chelsea would be that if they're going to be heartless and replace someone, that would be there. So yes, I would say they're Arsenal for very similar reasons.
It's funny. You think about the City Chelsea matchup coming up. It could become the Thomas Tuchel Bowl. Depending on how things go. So we'll have to definitely keep our finger on the pulse of that one. Mari, before we let you go, where can everyone find your work?
It's on the Liverpool Offside, which is an SB Nation site. It's also, if you go on my Twitter, I tend to retweet myself. So it's my name, Mari C. Lewis, is my handle on Twitter.
Great stuff. Again, thanks for coming on the show, joining us, and helping us open 2021. And we look forward to having you back again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And special thanks again to Mari Lewis for joining us on the show. Roberto, let's get back into football. While we were gone, while we were away, the draw was made for the Champions League round of 16. And I will give it to you and then we can discuss it. So, the matchups as they stand. Borussia Mönchengladbach versus Manchester City. Lazio versus Bayern Munich. Atletico Madrid versus Chelsea. Leipzig-Liverpool that we discussed just a moment ago, Porto versus Juventus, Barcelona versus PSG, a rematch of a pretty brutal defeat there for Barca, Sevilla, Borussia Dortmund, and Atalanta, Real Madrid. Like I said, we did go into depth a little bit with the Leipzig-Liverpool discussion with Mari, and let's talk about what's the one you're most looking forward to in this one.
Oh, actually, I wanted to correct you, actually, on Joe. It's a brutal loss for PSG, not right. Barcelona.
Right, exactly. Sorry.
Yeah. the famous 6-1 win back in 2017. No, I think we do see a lot of interesting matches. I don't think there are a few or a lot out there that are easily going to be just decided straightforward. Excuse me. I think the Barca-PSG game is very interesting, given the fact that, it's a rematch of the game against 2017. We see the new hire of Mauricio Pochettino to PSG, obviously the Neymar connection, even the Messi rumors where he could possibly be heading to PSG when he's a free agent at the end of the season. That's definitely one to watch out for. I think as well, as we mentioned in the interview with Maria, I think Liverpool-Leipzig one is very interesting. I think two sides that like to attack, two German managers, two sides that obviously have done very well respectively in their leagues. I think that's definitely one to look out for. I think Chelsea is also another one that I think will be good to watch. I think Simeone's side has done so well so far in La Liga. They've been so consistent in under him as well. It feels as if, though, they need to break that hump to win something. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they could win the Champions League, but they need to do something, and then certainly they have the team that's capable of doing it. Above all that, I think even the Atalanta-Real Madrid one is a good one. Yes, they might lose Papu Gomez in the next few weeks. We don't know what could happen, but this is an Atalanta side that likes to score goals as well. It's not as... It's not the same Atalanta side as we've seen over the last couple seasons, but they could still entertain people. We could see what Sevilla can do against a Borussia Dortmund side that are also very young. I think Juventus have it straightforward against Porto. I know Porto can be one of those shock teams that we've always been seeing, who have always been consistently well. Maybe they can do something. I don't think they can. Even Lazio and Bayern Munich is interesting. Let's see if Ciro Immobile can do something against this talented Bayern side that is the best team in the world. And then we got Mönchengladbach City. I think, Mönchengladbach are a side that are kind of that sleeper underrated pick that many people do not want to underestimate, as we saw in the group stage. So, yeah, these are a lot of entertaining games, actually, Joe. I think there are even games where you can't really decide on just one team with a few exceptions. So, no, these are really tasty ties, Joe, and I'm really excited for them when I come back in February.
I agree with you. I think that these are all interesting ties. I don't think there's a bad one in the bunch, to be honest with you, which is fantastic. We've seen previously, previous years where there might be a bad matchup here or a bad matchup there. A matchup that doesn't really, give you much excitement or much hope to watch, but these are all interesting ties.
The key word for me, when I look at the majority of these teams here in the Champions League, the key word for me is inconsistency. There are a lot of teams on this list that right now are showing some form of inconsistency that they're going to have to overcome, even though a team on the other side of that ledger might also be showing some inconsistency. You know, first and foremost, Barca, PSG, like you mentioned. These are two teams. There are so many storylines. Does Messi want to go to PSG? Does Neymar go back to Barca? You know, the history between the two of the teams with the brutal loss for PSG, like you said. But these are also two teams that are somewhat inconsistent right now, costing Thomas Tuchel his job, if you think about it. And currently, Barca, if I remember correctly, and I don't have the listing in front of me, I believe currently sitting fifth or sixth in La Liga. So, inconsistencies. Juventus versus Porto. We talk about the inconsistency of Juve. Right now, people are starting to bark about Andrea Pirlo and his time at Juve, should it be done. So, there's inconsistency there. Chelsea, again, another inconsistent side. Man City, inconsistent as well. Mönchengladbach, so well in the Champions League, not quite so hot in the Bundesliga. Atalanta, Papu Gomez, what's going to happen? Again, inconsistency. So there is a lot of that, and I think the inconsistency of these various teams are really one of the things that make these matchups so flavorful for me, because you don't know what you're going to get. And I think that is going to be one of the more exciting parts. We know about the exciting players on all sides, but the how they play together is going to be one of those things that we're going to watch as the two stages take place, and really see what happens here. But let's go through and let's make some predictions. I'll take it from the top. I'll give it to you, and we'll trade them back and forth like we always do. I'm going to start with Mönchengladbach, Manchester City. I know we're early. I know that we're not going to be playing these matches for, I believe, a few weeks, but it doesn't hurt to make any predictions now. And, of course, these predictions can change based on what any of these teams might do in the transfer window. The aforementioned Papu Gomez, for one, would be a huge one. So, for me, Mönchengladbach, Manchester City, I do see City closing this one out. I think we got a little taste of Mönchengladbach's inability to compete with the big boys in their 2-2 draw against Real Madrid on the final day. They did get in through the back door, but I think ultimately City, the pedigree, the Pep Guardiola, all of that stuff, I think will overcome. So I would take City in that one. How about you? What do you think, Roberto?
Yeah, I think so as well. I think as much as Mönchengladbach has surprised us in a way in the group stage, I think that Manchester City just have the better quality, and then I think on beyond two legs they have enough to go past Mönchengladbach in this one. So I'm going to go for Manchester City to advance to the quarterfinals.
Yep. Lazio, Bayern Munich. I'm going to let you take that one first.
I mean, you know, I'd like to see Lazio making competitive, because they are a good side and they have shown that they deserve to be in the Champions League and to compete on all levels. But this Bayern Munich side is a machine. You know, they're absolutely dominant on all fronts. You know, they are literally a well-oiled machine. And I don't think that a team like Lazio are going to surprise them or cause any concern. So I think Bayern Munich will win this one convincingly and qualify.
I agree with you. I'd also take Bayern in this one. But Lazio is one of those teams that have shown that they can play with the big boys. They did it in Champions League. They've done it in the Serie A. The Serie A is incredibly competitive this season, and they're right there with everybody else. I think Bayern will advance, like you said, but if I'm Bayern Munich, I'm not sleeping on this Lazio side, because they can come at you and score goals, and then they do it very quickly. So Bayern for me as well, but I do think this one is not going to be as straightforward as many would think. Atletico-Chelsea. So for me, this is a great matchup, because it's the attacking prowess of Chelsea versus the defensive mindedness of Atleti. I think ultimately we're going to see Atletico advance here. And this would be the first quote-unquote upset, because of a second-place team taking on a group winner. But for me, Atleti do have that same pedigree that I was just talking about with Bayern, I was talking about with Manchester City. And I think that they know over two legs how to wrestle a team to the ground. I also think, for me, not for nothing, with the Diego Costa thing, I think Atleti got better. And the reason I say Atleti got better with parting with Diego Costa is because of the distraction.
I think Diego Costa can be a divider. And I think that now that that is gone, I really do think that Atleti will have a much better focus. Chelsea, again, right now, very talented, very deep, but very inconsistent. And I think Atleti, for me, are going to take this one. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's the factor. I think the inconsistency will be a huge thing for Chelsea. I think with this Atletico Madrid side, it's a side that's very well oiled, very organized, very cerebral on how they act within two legs because of how experienced they've been in this competition under Simeone. I think the distraction of Diego Costa definitely has given them a bit more freedom and has allowed them to become much more expressive and not as, you know, not have that distraction in a way. So yeah, I think Atletico have enough to personally go through Chelsea and advance to the quarterfinals.
And I know we talked about Leipzig-Liverpool with Mari, but I'd like your quick 2 seconds on it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting tie. I think no one should definitely underestimate Leipzig as a whole. I think they have proven why they've been so competitive over the last few seasons, not just in the Bundesliga, but also in the Champions League. I think they are a side that, you know, can make it tight. I don't know if they will have enough against a Liverpool side that are good, that are going to have players coming back from injury. You know, I think the big question will be for Liverpool is how that kind of depth and that kind of mental fortitude allows them heading into this competition when it comes back, because of all of the matches that they had to play in England, be it domestically or in a league or whatever it may be. I think if Liverpool are able to maintain that kind of sanity and to be more organized, then I think they should advance past Leipzig. But I think they will do it. But I think it'll be much tighter than people will think.
I couldn't agree with you more. This one for me is almost a toss-up, and strictly because of the injuries that Liverpool have suffered so far this season. Leipzig, like we had said earlier, was a very nice, well-rounded team. They can do it both sides, offense and defense. Liverpool are going to score goals. They are going to score goals. That's just like death taxes, and Liverpool will score goals. The question is going to be, will they be able to defend well enough to hold off Leipzig? I think this is a toss-up. I will take Liverpool in this, but it is very, very tight, and I would not be surprised at all if Leipzig did advance over Liverpool. The next one, Porto-Juve. You know, for me, as a Juventino, I am concerned. This is probably one of the best options that Juve could have hoped for in terms of the draw. I think that they should handle Porto very, very easily. A Porto side that did advance with Manchester City in their group, but again, inconsistency. As somebody that, you know, watches this, I do worry about that a lot. I will take Juve in this one, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens if they make any moves in this transfer window before they hit this particular tie. How about you, my friend?
Well, here's the thing as well. Doesn't this remind you a bit of the Lyon game last season?
It does. It reminds me a lot of Lyon, unfortunately. Something that was a given, something that should have been done and dusted for Juve, given the depth of talent versus what Lyon had to offer last season. And again, it didn't happen, and that's why this scares me a lot. What do you think?
I don't think Lightning will strike twice for the upset. I think Juventus understand that they need to win this title. I think they understand that, yes, outside of Barcelona, obviously, you know, they haven't been fully challenged as of yet. If they do advance, they will obviously meet a team that will definitely be much more stronger than Porto. I think when you have someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, who, you know, always tends to do so well of a second half of a season, you would expect him to be that kind of leader and to demonstrate why he's so good in this competition. You expect him to go into that and be as performative, be as a huge performer in the competition. But can the other teammates step up? That's the big thing. So if they're able to support him, then I think Juventus can do that. But I think they shouldn't underestimate Porto. I think after what we saw against Lyon last season, they can't underestimate these so-called lesser teams. But I do believe that Juventus should have enough to qualify to the quarterfinals.
Agreed. How about Barca-PSG? What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is always going to be the one to watch out for. I think, you know, when you look at how Barcelona are dealing with so much turmoil, I think obviously suffering the 8-2 loss last season to Bayern Munich, they want to get back on the right track. It hasn't been that good enough under Koeman, as we've seen in the league. You know, we see the discomfort and how discontent Lionel Messi has been now that he's able to negotiate with any team. how PSG is obviously one of those rumored teams. I think they can have enough to go through it. I think they should. I think this PSG side also are should not be underestimated. I think they are a side that are trying to do well now under a new manager. They understand the talent that they have. They know that the final last season wasn't a formality. They want to go back. They want to win it. So because of that, I think PSG will advance. I generally think that because of something going on at Barcelona, I think it's just been so inconsistent. There's so many injuries going on. They just had Coutinho, actually, that he's going to be missing a few weeks as well. They still have to deal with Ansu Fati going out. We're not seeing the likes of Antoine Griezmann perform. You know, we see a lot of inconsistency from this team. I think PSG are a bit more on track, if I could say that. So I think PSG will advance on this one. And maybe this is the last time we see Messi in a Barca shirt because of this early exit under Ronald Koeman.
I'm going to disagree with you on the prediction strictly for the same reasons you just gave. The inconsistency of Barca, concerning. Losing Ansu Fati, concerning. Losing Coutinho, concerning. Barcelona, you know, obviously trying to make the last run with Messi in a Barcelona jersey might be that's a real possibility. Koeman not getting these players to play at their top, you know, aka Griezmann, again. Gerard Piqué also missing. You know, there's a lot of pieces here that Barca are missing. Having said that, changing your manager at this point in time is, for me, always a big, big no-no, especially when you talk about the differences in styles between Pochettino and Tuchel. I really think that this was the wrong time to do it. And for me, because of that, I feel like Barca, who have been, I don't want to say overachieving in Champions League, but certainly playing better in Champions League than they were playing in La Liga. I think this is a spot where if this couldn't have broken any better for Barca, I don't know what would have. So for me, Barca's going to advance here, and it is awful, awful close. Again, this is the biggest toss-up of all the toss-ups, but I just think that the inconsistencies on both sides will give you, you know, will be the mystery. And I think who overcomes those inconsistencies best will be the team that advances in that one. Sevilla, Borussia Dortmund, another interesting one for me. For me, I think this one is going to be Dortmund. You know, young, attacking, it is going to be very, very difficult for Sevilla to keep up with this one. Losing the likes of a player like Ever Banega, who they lost in the transfer window, is a guy that really would have been that pit bull in the midfield for me, that would have kind of solidified the attacking position of Dortmund. He would have been able to prevent that. And I just don't think that Sevilla have enough to stop Dortmund from scoring goals. So for me, Dortmund in this one. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think now with Erling Haaland returning, you know, obviously we're going to see goals from him. He likes scoring in this competition. I think the Sevilla side, you know, it's a new different task now, not playing the Europa League. But, you know, they've also been a bit inconsistent as well in the, not even in the league as well. I think in the Champions League, it did take a while for them to qualify. But I think Dortmund should go through. I think they have enough quality to advance past Sevilla against a really good Lopetegui side, I must add. I think they are very talented in every way possible. But I just don't think that they have enough to beat this Dortmund side beyond two legs. So, yeah, I'm going to go for the Germans on this one.
I agree. The last one, my friend, Atalanta-Real Madrid. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think we saw what Atalanta were able to do over these last few seasons of being that kind of darlings of Italian football and just enchanting the world, you would say, on the way that they play and how they like to score goals. But they do face a really good Real Madrid side that, you know, had a bit of a task qualifying to the end, to the round of 16. But I think just because of that, you know, you talk about the mental fortitude of what we had at Liverpool. I think Real Madrid also have that as well. I think when you have someone like Zinedine Zidane, who keeps a cool head, wants the best from his players, obviously is a known winner of this competition, they want to get the best out of these players. I think when you have your quality players like your Sergio Ramos, your Karim Benzema's, you know, all those players turning it up, I think that's when they are really deadly. I think they should pass to Atalanta. I think they will do it. I would hope that it will be much more tighter than one would imagine, but I think this Real Madrid side, because of that kind of mental fortitude and experience in this competition, they should be able to advance past Atalanta and go to the quarterfinals.
This Papu Gomez situation at Atalanta is really going to ruin the team in this competition. He's a player that does make the team go. We've seen them start out with Papu on the bench and bring him on and just overtake teams. And if they do sell him off in this window before these matches, I think it's a huge loss for them. And I think it's sealed in stone that Real Madrid will definitely advance. If Papu Gomez is still there, I think it's a very, very different Atalanta side. It is a much, much more dangerous Atalanta side. And you start to worry about Real Madrid's ability to defend all the attacking that Atalanta present to you in over the course of 180 minutes. I think it'll be a massive, massive challenge. So for me, the prediction, ultimately, I think the prediction is Real Madrid for me. However, I think I would like to reserve my right to change my mind if Papu Gomez is still there when they hit the pitch for the first time in the first leg, because I think he is that much of a game changer. And I think that what he does for that Atalanta side, he's that metronome that makes them go with Zapata, with Muriel, with Ilicic coming back. There's so much more. There's so much better as an attacking side with Papu Gomez there that I think you have to reserve your right, and I think there could be a potential for Atalanta to upset the apple cart and advance here as well. So again, that'll be our discussion on the Champions League. We'll obviously get, as we get a little closer and some of these moves are made, we'll get to discuss this a little more, but initially our reactions to the Champions League. Let's talk about matches of the week coming up this week, because we do have some tasty ones, including the semifinals of the Copa Libertadores, which I think is fantastic, because we are headed down that Super Classico path again yet, my friend. So on Tuesday, River Plate and Palmeiras at 7:30 p.m. On Wednesday, in terms of Copa Libertadores, we've got Boca and Santos playing at 5:15 p.m. In our European leagues, starting on Wednesday in the Serie A, a big one, AC Milan, currently the last unbeaten side in the top five leagues, take on Juventus at 2:45 p.m. We go to Ligue 1 at 3 p.m. for Saint-Étienne PSG. And then on Friday, we go to the Bundesliga for Mönchengladbach Bayern Munich at 2:30 p.m. And Saturday, we head to La Liga with Atletico Madrid and Athletic Club at 10:15 a.m. There are no Premier League games this week as they are going into FA Cup competition. So let me give you the trivia question again, my friend. And it was a bit of a nostalgic one. Our good friend Jim Hart, who we lost a little over a year ago, when he first came on this show, it was a reminiscent trivia question. His Twitter handle was Catenaccio, and he had what he called a nom de guerre, which was kind of his screen name, his pseudonym, his pen name, or whatever you want to call it. So, do you remember what Jim Hart's nom de guerre was?
So I know his first name. Uh-huh. I knew his first name. It was Victor.
That's correct.
But his last name, that's the one I'm trying to think. I think it's this one.
Go ahead. What's that? It's an Italian cheese.
It's an
Italian cheese.
Ah, man. Scamrosa, Scanorsa. No, it's not coming out for me. I'm sorry.
Victor Scamorza.
Scamorza.
Victor Scamorza. That's what
it was.
Yeah,
that I knew was... It started with an S, and I was trying to think what it was, but it couldn't come out.
Yeah, and again, you know, just thinking of Jim Hart over the holidays, and that popped into mind. I thought that would be a great trivia question for us. So, without further ado, we have kicked off 2021, my friend. Let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So, for episode 310 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Mari Lewis for joining us. Next week, we'll look back on the leagues as they all get back to work. We all get back to work and move on in the 2021 season. So, for episode 310 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I am Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.